Good afternoon. We're back with another episode of the Sean Moe Hoops podcast. I'm pleased to have with me an esteemed guest in college basketball and CBS studio analyst, Clark Kellogg, one of the faces of March Madness. Clark, how are you doing today?
I'm terrific, Sean. Good to be with you and glad we could connect and have a conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And appreciate the time. I know last week might have been a little busy for you and you're getting ready for the Sweet 16 starting tomorrow. But before we really jump into the college basketball talk, you know, today is the McDonald's All-American game, the 2019 game. And I know you were a McDonald's All-American back in your heyday and yeah. Just wanted to kind of, you know, reflect on that moment and talk about some of the big differences that we might see today in the McDonald's All-American game versus when you were playing in 79.
Well, I tell you what, 1979 was my senior year of high school, and it was a really a culmination of all that I had hoped for and dreamed about in terms of a high school basketball career. Grew up in Cleveland, fell in love with basketball probably when I was 8, 9 years old. Loved reading about it, watching it, and trying to do what I saw guys on TV doing. And just fell in love with the game. It captivated me. You know, ESPN has done a series, one of its 30 for 30s calls, Basketball, a Love Story, and a lot of the same stories of some of the great players in the history of the game resonate with me. Playground basketball, youth league basketball, the fascination with the game, the joy of being out there on the playground all day if you could stay on the court or if you were good enough to be picked even if you lost, working on your moves, thinking about it. All of that stuff really resonated. 79 culminated in us getting to the state championship with my high school, Cleveland, St. Joseph High School, called Villa Angela St. Joe's now. Was all boys at the time. I was there and has since become co-ed in the early 90s. But that All-American game, I actually missed one of them, Sean. There were multiple All-American games at the time. Our state tournament was going on during one of them, but I did play in another, and that class is considered perhaps the best high school class of all time for all of the players that excelled in high school that went on to excel in college, and then many are Naismith, a few of them are made Naismith Hall of Famers to this day. So to be selected as one of the top players in that class, and by consensus, I was considered one of the top five players in that class. Was really a really special time for me. Loved playing against the guys I had read about and watched from a distance. Had fun being on a couple of those game trips with those guys. So it was all good memories, all really good memories from being able to be a McDonald's All-American back in 79.
Well, one quick question on that. I know today, you know, pretty much all these guys have played with each other, whether it's USA events or AAU events, but how well did you know some of the other top-ranked guys in your class?
Did not.
Or was it just
did
word
not
of
know them at all, Sean. We didn't have opportunities. AAU was something that was for older players at that time. I mean, it was where you found high-level borderline pro players in the AAU ranks back in the 70s and 80s. AAU, as we know it today, really didn't start to take off until the, I want to say, probably late 80s, early 90s is when the AAU scene started to pick up and guys would be able to go outside of their region. You might come across some of these outstanding players in a camp, in an invitation camp. And I bumped into a couple of players at a Kentucky basketball camp between my junior and senior year in high school that I went to, where it was fairly pretty standard that some of these higher profile programs would have basketball camps where they would invite some of the top players in the country there. But no, I didn't know him. I mean, I read about him because I was keeping tabs of some of the other better players in the country. But it wasn't until we convened on the court in Kentucky for the Derby Festival and then in D.C. for the Cap City Classic. I played in an all-star game in Kutcher's, New York. And again, these were the top players in the country pretty much playing in these games. So no interaction until then with those guys.
Okay. And, you know, do you get a chance to watch the game tonight? I know just looking back at last year where really nowadays it's a lot of the top players we see in that are the ones you're talking about kind of 1 year later, later in March, whether it's Zion or somebody yeah. else. But, you know, will you get a chance to watch the game?
No, I won't. I typically don't. Every now and then I'll stumble upon it. But during this time of year, I'm really focused on the NCAA tournament and then taking some time away from that even. I mean, yep. we're on the air last week, you know, for those two back-to-back 16 game days. Those are 13, 14-hour days. And then it slows down to about 10-hour days on Saturday and Sunday. So when I get home on Monday, I typically veg out through the same Tuesday, and I start nibbling back into my preparation on Wednesday because we don't have as significant a workload. So I don't watch a ton of basketball. I kind of peruse what's going on with the women's tournament, what's happened in high school. But, again, I don't make it appointment television to watch. I tend to like to wait until the guys get to college unless there's a chance to see them in the path of what I'm doing. But I don't go out of my way to try to watch at this point in time.
Okay. Well, we talked about you as a McDonald's All-American and then a stellar career at Ohio State. But want to jump to real quick your rookie year. And I heard this on a podcast maybe last year. I think it was with Zach Lowe and Elton Brand. And they were talking about rookies that averaged 20 points and 10 rebounds, which is a pretty, pretty rare feat. And I don't think has been actually done since Elton Brand did it his rookie year. But you talk about such players as Shaq and David Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Tim Duncan. But you were able to do this in your rookie year, which is a pretty remarkable feat. And how difficult of a, you know, how difficult was that? 20 and 10, you know, even a slower paced game back then. But yeah. Take me back to that point in your time and that great season you had.
Well, I tell you, I was fortunate. I mean, I got drafted by the Indiana Pacers, which wasn't too far from where I had spent my time growing up in Cleveland and Columbus, Ohio, and playing at Ohio State. And I was fortunate in another way. A teammate, former college teammate of mine, was already there, Herb Williams. And he really broke me into the NBA and helped smooth my transition. Obviously, playing in the Big Ten, you get high-level competition all the time. Growing up in Cleveland, once I got to high school, a lot of the Cavaliers hung around and played pickup basketball during the summer, and they would invite guys like me and high school, college kids that were back for the summer to get some exposure to playing with the real pros, and it gave me some confidence as I was developing as a high school player. And then when I got on to college and ultimately to the NBA, I felt like I was ready to compete. And I got a great opportunity being drafted by the Pacers, a team that was struggling mightily at the time, but was seeking to build something going forward. And I got a lot of playing time and was able to produce some pretty good numbers, albeit on a team that was really, at that point in time, just not good enough to compete. But I take some satisfaction in showing up as a rookie and being able to be consistent in my production. And laid a foundation for what at that time I hope would be an all-star type career on playoff teams. But my knee injury showed up 3 years later, and ultimately I was done by 1987.
Well, at that point, you know, after 87, we eventually got into the broadcasting. And I'm just curious about why broadcasting and how that transition worked early on. And then, you know, kind of how you were able to move up the ladder in different avenues.
You know what, Sean, it's really interesting. I was a marketing major in college, thought about being an entrepreneur of some sort. I got my property and casualty insurance license through a mentor of mine who I worked with in Cleveland in his insurance agency, Ira Novak. As soon as I turned 18, got exposed to the real world of business, thought I could perhaps be successful in that whenever my playing career was over. But because my playing career ended so prematurely because of my left knee injury, wore away cartilage in my left knee, had three arthroscopies to try to repair that damage, but just wasn't able to return to NBA basketball after the third surgery and had to retire at 26. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do at that point in time. We've been married a couple years. We had just had our first of three children in March of 87. I retired in August, And I got an opportunity both with the Pacers to do radio broadcasting and with Cleveland State University, the school in my hometown of Cleveland. And from there, really enjoyed still being connected to the game in a way that kind of fit my aptitude and my skill set. I was always a fairly good student of the game. Loved reading about it, loved studying it, and I always took seriously communicating clearly and articulately. My mother would not have it any other way. She said that was mandatory if you were going to be having microphones in front of you because of your basketball ability. You better not embarrass me on television not being able to talk. So that admonishment from my late mom drove me to communicate well. I was always one of our team spokesmen when I was in, obviously going back to high school and then even in college and my short time in the NBA. So it seemed like a neat way to try to carve out another career. I enjoyed it right from the start and thought I could be good at it. So the Pacers gave me my first opportunity on radio covering Indiana Pacer games. And at the same time, I'm a local Cleveland television station was doing the Cleveland State games. Ironically, the guy who was the general manager of that station that was carrying the games was also a graduate of my high school. And he knew of me through my high school career, but also knew I was doing Pacers broadcasting.
Okay.
And thought it would be a win-win. So that's how I got started, the fall of 87. I think I retired in August, Sean. By late September, I had agreed to do Pacer games on radio. And then just a short few weeks later, I was under contract to do Cleveland State University games on television. I think a package of about 8 to 10 games. Boy, I was rough around the edges, but I had potential. I was like one of those freshmen you see on the college hoop scene, and you say, man, this guy is a little raw, but he might be good in a year or two. And that's kind of how I was behind the mic.
Okay. And I know eventually that you know, potential turned into working at the Big East Network, ESPN, and eventually CBS. You know, one of the things that I always enjoyed, you know, listening to you, one of the few things, but the food analogies you had, how did you come up with those or really start to use some of those to describe what you were seeing on the court?
Well, with some of my early play-by-play partners and some of my producers and directors, I would always ask them, what does it take to be good in this business? And they would always say pretty much universally, you have to be yourself. You have to be willing to do your work. And it's nice if you have something that distinguishes you from others. I was relatively young and just out of the game, so a lot of the game lingo that you hear, some of the slang terminology that's the basketball language, was part of how I talked. So I used that in my analysis. And then as I got more into it, I wanted to be able to connect common day, everyday things to the redundancy of basketball. Basketball is 10 people, one ball, two rings, a 94-by-50-foot box, and it's pretty redundant in terms of the things that go on in the game. And so I would just, I know everybody relates to food in some form or fashion,
yep.
And I like to try to connect common things to basketball so that it helps paint a picture or may elicit a smile or a laugh. So food analogies became, and some of the food analogies actually quite fit. I mean, dessert before dinner. You know, that's a quick shot. Usually you eat dinner, then you have dessert. Well, in basketball, you want to move the defense and get a quality shot and not rush into a poor shot early. And so that was part of it. But again, it was just trying to find common things, and food is about as common and universal as we can get. Music is another one. I'll filter in a couple of those. But food became kind of one of my favorite ways to connect common everyday experience to something in basketball.
Okay. Well, previously you mentioned kind of the 16 hour days on this past Thursday, Friday, and with a tournament starting, you're in your prime time part of the season. But yeah. What is the preparation that goes into this? I know, you know, Thursday, Friday, you're doing pregame, postgame, mm-hmm. halftime, and you have to be able to talk very knowledgeably about really every single team and player, which you do. And I'm curious about the preparation that kind of goes into the first weekend, and then as well as once you're in the thick of things, how things are progressing through that Thursday through Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I'm preparing for the tournament all year long, Sean. I keep a running notebook of the games that I watch, and I'm watching everybody. As a matter of fact, I tend to skew my watching to the non-power conferences quite a bit during the regular season. I try to highlight the three or four top teams in the non-Power Six conferences, the A-Sun, the Sun Belt, the SoCon, Southland, Big West. I try to make sure I've locked into at least the top two or three teams in that league during the regular season. And then as we get closer to conference tournament week, then I make sure I watch all of the conference tournament games, primarily quarters and semis, and I'll watch just about every conference championship game, particularly of those non-power conferences. I get plenty of opportunities to see the Power Six conferences through going to Ohio State games. I live here in Columbus, so I get to attend. I have season tickets, so my wife and I will attend probably 6 to 8 Buckeye games during the year. I'll shoot in and watch a practice. I might even go to a shoot around of an opposing team when they're in town, if they look like they might be tournament worthy. And so I'm preparing all year long for the 16 game days we have on Thursday, Friday. So by the time we go through Selection Sunday, Sean, I'm comfortable not even looking at the bracket when we get it before the show goes on the air, because of how well prepared I've been through the regular season. I've seen every team that's going to be in the field of 68 at least once or twice, some of those teams in person, and most of them by way of video. So I wait until the bracket's revealed to see it, just like the fans at home do. We typically get it anywhere from, it could be 15 minutes before we go on the air, up to 40 minutes, just depending on the difficulty the committee is having with bracketing. And so forth. So, yeah, so I actually prepare all season long. And that's why I'm able to highlight teams like I did this year with Cal Irvine. Yep. I was telling everybody about them a month ago. Oregon came on strong, but I could see them gelling. Liberty, I watched an awful lot, so was able to tab them as a team to keep an eye on. And I enjoy that. I love it. I love being able to identify some of those teams that aren't getting a ton of pub during the regular season, and being able to make people aware of them as we get ready for the tournament.
Okay, and I always enjoy your Wednesday watch list on Twitter, which usually highlights some of those players that aren't getting the notoriety that a lot of the Power Six schools and players are.
Thank you. Yeah, that was something I just came up with this year, as a way, again, to fortify my preparation, but also to, one, give those kids some attention and some well-earned and deserved acknowledgement and praise, and also to make fans aware of these guys that are maybe not all of them are going to be All-American. Most of them won't be All-Americans, but they all were pretty much all-league caliber players, but oftentimes we don't hear about them until and if they make a run in March.
Right, right. And, in terms of preparation, obviously there's the basketball side, but then being able to work with a lot of different personalities and people on air. And right now we see you a lot with kind of the TNT NBA crew. So Kenny and Charles and Ernie, and they're obviously great basketball minds, but at the same time, they're focused on the NBA during the year for the most part. So how do you kind of, maybe not orchestrate, but how is it kind of working with them and kind of steering the conversation in different directions at times?
You know what, it's interesting. This is my sixth year back in the studio. I started at CBS full-time in 97 and was the lead studio analyst. I did games as well during the regular season, then went out to be part of the lead announced team with Jim Nance and Steve Kerr and Tracy Wolfson for 5 years, and then came back into the studio in 2014, and have really enjoyed it, thoroughly enjoyed it. My late mom gave me a plaque that I still keep and have about marriage, and the essence of it was that it's not about having the right partner, it's about being the right partner. And so I attempt, whoever I'm working with, to be a good partner, to be the right partner, to be the best partner or teammate that I can be for whoever I'm with. And I work with many of our different play-by-play guys during the regular season, our different producers, deck directors, and broadcast associates, that whole team that makes up a telecast. And I try to be a good partner. Obviously, Kenny and Charles and Ernie have great history together. They love being part of the tournament. They bring who they are, which is tremendous credibility in basketball and also great fun and entertainment to what they do. And it's been a great, great mix, our partnership. And I think part of it is there's mutual respect and like for one another. I mean, we enjoy these 3 weeks we get to be together. Obviously, I'm the guy who spent most of the year watching college basketball because they've got another gig they do. And I share everything that I have with them around college basketball teams and players they might not have seen, what I think. We talk a lot of basketball when we're not actually on camera and have some nice, fun, healthy discussions and debates. And then we really have fun. And I hope that comes across on the air that we're serious about the game, but we're not too serious about ourselves. And when it needs to be kind of recalibrated or re-anchored in terms of some nuts and bolts around the college game, then I tend to be the one that steps into that fray because that's part of what I bring to the group.
Yeah, that definitely comes across very easily on the TV screen. But, you know, one guy that gets a lot of the attention is Charles Barkley. And how is it, you know, how is it working with him on a daily basis and getting to see, you know, how he's watching the game and a lot of the behind the scenes with him?
Oh, he's hilarious, man. He's such a naturally authentic and funny guy that you can't help but to enjoy being in his company. I mean, he's naturally funny. And he's genuinely authentic. That's part of his great appeal and popularity to the masses. I mean, people ask me all the time, what's it like? And I tell them, if your laughing muscles haven't been worked out, then they're going to get overtaxed when you're hanging out with him because he's going to keep you laughing on air and off air. And but he loves the game. He really appreciates what the tournament is on the sports calendar. He says it all the time every year how it's one of the greatest sporting events that he's ever attended, and he's been to just about all of the big ones in some form or fashion. And so it's a really good partnership across the board. But it's great fun, great fun. We have tremendous respect for one another across the board. We enjoy being together. We enjoy being part of such a great sports property and working with a lot of really, really outstanding and good people. So we're grateful, and hopefully all of that comes across. But with Charles, I mean, I just chuckle thinking about him, some of the stuff that he says and the way that he says it and his engagement with the games. You know, his Auburn Tigers are still alive, so it's Auburn versus North Carolina, and I'm probably going to have to be some type of mediator between him and Kenny Thursday and up until game time on Friday. I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see what comes out of that matchup and how they respond and react to it.
Yeah, those are two teams that don't often match up on the basketball court. So,
right.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of shots of how they are reacting to that, and I'm sure a lot of joking behind the scenes leading.
No question. There'll be some stuff on there too, Sean. I just don't know what it's going to be.
Well, speaking of some of the games coming up, and, you know, we have a field that is now very talented with really no low seeds. I mean, you have Oregon, but they won the Pac-12. They're in the Final Four 2 years ago. And last Sunday morning, you kind of called Tremont Waters as one of the players to watch on that Sunday, and he ended up hitting the game-winning shot to help LSU advance. Who are some of the players that you're really excited to watch coming into the Sweet 16?
Oh, man, there's so many guys that I've really enjoyed all season long. And now on this stage, obviously, everything is magnified. But I just continue to marvel at what Cassius Winston has done and that Michigan State team in light of losing what they lost in Josh Langford and having the injuries to Kyle Arns and Nick Ward for a time. Oh, man, they've just been so impressive. And Cassius has been in the middle of it all. I don't think anybody's had more moments of magnitude, I call them, when your team really needs you, whether it's a shot, a steal, a pass, He seems to have made as many or more than most anybody in college basketball for his team. So really looking forward to seeing him and Tremont Waters in that point guard matchup. You know, this Florida State team, Fiondu Cabangeli is a big-time pro prospect in my mind. He's only a sophomore, but, man, he can do a bunch of stuff. Strong, can shoot the three, can board it, block shots. And he's only been playing about 22 minutes a game, although I think it's upticked in the tournament. And Chuck and I talk about this. He's probably a guy that should be on the floor for 30 to 35 minutes a game for Florida State as they try to make a run to the Final Four. But he's one of my favorite players. The kid Corey Davis Jr. at Houston has been outstanding in shot making and leadership. Love watching Cam Johnson from North Carolina. His stroke is absolutely textbook and lethal. And I'm hopeful that Carson Edwards can be as efficient as he is dynamic. He was in that game against Villanova, but he's had more games where he's been 5 for 20 than he's been 9 of 16.
Right.
But hopefully we'll see that. And then the kid Kenny Wooten at Oregon, man, he's quite impressive as an octopus rim protector. Man, he's all over the place. So no, their number. I mean, you could go right down the list. But those are some of the guys that I'll kind of have on isolated camera in their matchups coming up.
Okay, and what I know, you know, you can go down the list, and really every game is definitely entertaining in some way. But is there one that is maybe a little more intriguing than another, just based on matchups or styles of play that you're really excited for?
Well, one is the rematch between Gonzaga and Florida State. I mean, okay. Primarily the same teams met at the same time last year.
Yep.
When you look at the personnel, so anytime you have that type of matchup, I think it jumps out at you, a rematch of teams that met a year ago, and Florida State got the better of the Zags in that one. I think both teams are maybe a tad better than they were a year ago. So that's the one that probably jumps out at me the most. Then the Carolina-Auburn game, not because of what it looks like on the court, but there is a contrast in styles there. Really small ball, turn you over, shoot the three, play rapid fire basketball, which is what Auburn is best at. And then Carolina is as good at that game, but bigger. So that one, and then obviously the sidebar with Kenny and Charles will make that one second billing on the marquee, I would think, for fans anyway. So those are the two probably that jump out at me the most of our eight matchups.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think for the Gonzaga-Florida State, last year Gonzaga didn't have Brandon Clark, and I think he brings a different brand of athleticism to Gonzaga, so it'll be interesting to see how he translates. And then the UNC Auburn game of can UNC slow down Auburn's three-point shooters, and then can Auburn keep UNC off the board? So definitely
that's exactly right. That's what it's going to come down to. I mean, Carolina has been on occasion a little loose with the ball, and Auburn definitely wants to turn you over, but the rebounding thing is going to be large. It always is, but in this game, I think it's even more so.
And, you know, just going to the one of the other brackets, the South, Duke, you know, they were almost the team, the favorite that didn't advance against Central Florida in a crazy game. Do you think that they've got that out of their system, that it'll be smooth sailing, or do you think teams will take some of what they saw from Central Florida and start to implement that against Duke, especially Trey Jones and Goldwire?
Well, I certainly am in agreement with the consensus that Duke is the favorite to win it just based on the talent level, but the youth gives me pause. And in close games where teams can be very solid and disciplined defensively, trying and keeping Barrett and Zion from getting to the basket, which is really impossible to do for a full game. But if you can do it enough, you could actually create some problems for Duke. So I don't, you know, again, I look at each game as an entity in and of itself. Oftentimes championship teams have to go through a game where they're scared or they're fortunate to get by. I don't recall very many championship teams that didn't have one of those games, but I don't know if it has any bearing on what they do going forward. I think the opponents will be more an issue because of their ability to have experienced physical defenders that might keep Duke out of transition, which I thought, UCF did a great job of for the most part. And if you can do that and have some physicality along the front line and shot making on the perimeter, then I think that's a bit of Duke's kryptonite in terms of if you're going to beat them.
Definitely. And I'm not sure if you're allowed to make predictions, but if we had to fast forward a week, are there any teams that you think will be seen more so than others come the Final Four?
Any teams that'll be
that you're kind of predicting that you might be talking about more next week?
Oh, I had to do a bracket. CBSSports.com asked us all to do a bracket once the field is announced. So I did one where I had the three number one seeds, Duke, Gonzaga, and Virginia, getting to Minneapolis with Houston as kind of my outlier off the pace team. And then I actually did another one that has Michigan State, Gonzaga, Virginia, and Houston. So those are the teams that I've listed, and that's public, so I can't retract that. And then I had the Zags winning it all.
Still alive.
Yeah, they're still alive. And then I had the Zags winning it all, and I'm not getting off that train. I think they're the most balanced and experienced and talented when you look at all three of those elements. I think they've got it probably a fraction more than anybody else. So I picked them to win it all from the start. And obviously we'll adjust on TV as teams are available or not, but that's what it's looking like right now on the bracket that is for public display.
Okay. Well, yeah, if Houston could pull the Kentucky then Auburn North Carolina victories, that would
it would definitely shock some people. I mean, I got raised eyebrows, but Houston's really good. I mean, defensively, they're outstanding. They rebound the ball at a high level. They've got shot makers in Brooks and Corey Davis Jr. And the young fellow that's the X factor is Jahan Giroux, only a sophomore, but really an outstanding playmaker. The other guys are young, but Davis Jr. is a senior, and Galen Robinson Jr. is a point guard senior. Those guys have some grit to them that might allow them to shock everybody. Wish they had a tad more size, but it's not how big you are, it's how big you play. So we'll see how it plays out.
Definitely. And, you know, I could keep on going for a while with you, but I know you're going to be doing a lot of talking come Thursday through Sunday and want to keep you well rested for that. But
I really just wanted to
thank you for taking the time out of your schedule now, especially at this point of the year, to come on and talk some basketball, and was excited to have you on, and really excited to hear how the next few days go in the studio and halftime and postgame. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure, Sean. Great to visit with you, and always fun to talk hoops all year long during the basketball season, but certainly as we make this last dash towards a championship here in the next 2 weeks.
Definitely, and the Sweet 16 will kick off Thursday with four great games, and hopefully we'll be back to kind of recap that next week on the podcast. So once again, just want to thank Clark Kellogg from CBS Sports for coming on the podcast, and hopefully everybody learned something today, and talk to you guys next week.
Very good. Thanks, Sean.